A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know the moment. You just hauled the last box through the door. Your back is wrecked. Your bank account is weeping. And you're standing in a sea of cardboard swearing you will never, ever do this again. But here's the thing. You will. The average renter in the U.S. now moves every 18 to 24 months, according to the Census Bureau's most recent housing survey. This isn't a one-off disaster you survived. It's a recurring process. And the question isn't whether you'll move again, it's whether you'll do it the exact same stupid way.
Daniel's living this right now. He sent us a prompt mid-move, sixth move in Jerusalem in 10 years, second as a married couple, with a son turning one in a few days. He and Hannah are doing a significant chunk of the move themselves using industrial equipment because the last one cost $4,000, and this is a short hop within the city. And the core question he's asking is, since we can't escape the rental market, how do we at least make these inevitable moves less destructive over time? He's pointing at something like a Kaizen mentality. After every move, while the memories are still fresh, do a structured debrief, document what went wrong, and use that to improve the next one. He wants a concrete system for gathering the granular details that fade fast, so each move gets a little more driven.
The timing on this is exactly right. The most valuable window for improving your next move is the 72 hours after you finish this one. That's when you still remember that the dish pack boxes were too small for your plates, or that you wasted 45 minutes looking for the tape gun 3 separate times. A month from now, all that's left is a vague haze of exhaustion and the general sense that packing took forever.
Which is useless. Packing took forever doesn't tell you anything you can act on. It's an emotional residue, not a data point. And that's the trap almost everyone falls into. They confuse remembering how they felt with remembering what actually happened.
Let's talk about why this cycle feels so hopeless and why Kaizen might actually be the answer.
Kaizen is one of those words that's been hijacked by every productivity influencer and corporate consultant on the planet, but the core idea is genuinely powerful. It translates literally as continuous improvement, Kai meaning change, Zen meaning good. It was popularized by Toyota in the 1950s as part of the Toyota production system, and the central insight is that you don't need massive overhauls. You need small, incremental improvements applied consistently. A 1% gain per cycle compounds into something enormous over time.
A move is exactly the kind of recurring operational process this was designed for. It happens at a known frequency. Every year or two, it involves a defined set of tasks, and it has measurable outcomes. Cost, time, breakage, physical toll. Those are all quantifiable.
The specific mechanism we want here is something called the PDCA cycle. Plan, do, check, act. It was developed by a statistician named Walter Schuchart at Bell Labs in the 1930s and later adapted by W. Edwards Deming, who's the guy who taught the Japanese about quality control after World War II. The cycle works like this. You plan what you're going to do, you do it, you check how it went against the plan, and then you act on what you learn to adjust the next cycle. Most people who move do the first two. They plan, sort of, and they do the move. What's missing is the check and act phases, the structured debrief, and the deliberate change.
Here's the thing about the rental market that makes this urgent. It's not just that moving is expensive and exhausting in the moment. It's that the frequency is accelerating. Tenancy at will regimes. Which is what Daniel's dealing with in Israel, where a landlord can simply decide not to renew. Create a structural instability. You're not choosing to move, you're being moved. And when you don't control the timing, the only thing you can control is how prepared you are when the call comes.
And that's the psychological shift Daniel's getting at. When each move is treated as a unique traumatic event, you stay in a reactive posture. You're a victim of the market. But when you treat it as an iteration in a series, move number 4, move number 5, move number 6, you start to build institutional knowledge about your own life. You're not just enduring the cycle, you're getting better at it.
The enemy here, the thing that makes this hard, is memory decay. And it's not just that you forget things, it's that you forget the wrong things. The emotional peaks stay with you. You remember the argument you had when you were both exhausted at 11 p.m. You remember the moment you realized you'd underestimated the number of boxes by half. But you all remember that the reason you underestimated is because you counted rooms instead of counting shelf feet of books.
This is a well-documented phenomenon in cognitive psychology. It's called the peak end rule. People judge an experience largely by how they felt at its most intense point and at its end, not by the sum total of every moment. So your memory of the move collapses into a handful of vivid snapshots, and all the operational details that actually caused the problems get lost.
Which is why Daniel's instinct is right. You need a system that captures the granular stuff before it evaporates. Not packing was slow, but we spent 2 hours wrapping individual wine glasses in newspaper because we ran out of bubble wrap, and newspaper requires more layers to be effective. And the whole time we were doing it, we were also trying to figure out where the tape gun went.
That sentence right there contains 3 separate actionable improvements. 1, overorder bubble wrap by a specific margin. 2, create a designated tool pocket for the tape gun. 3, pre-wrap fragile items in the weeks before the move rather than doing it all on packing day. None of those are profound insights. They're tiny. But they're the kind of tiny improvement that, compounded over 5 or 6 moves, transforms the experience.
The tape gun example is perfect because it's so stupidly specific. You spend 10 minutes looking for the tape gun 3 times during packing. That's 30 minutes of wasted time and a huge amount of frustration. The fix costs $8 and takes 30 seconds to implement. Buy a brightly colored tape gun and designate 1 pocket in the tool bag for it, and it never leaves that pocket. That's Kaizen. That's the whole thing.
What I love about this is that it's the opposite of the way most people approach moving advice. The standard advice is all about big picture strategy. Hire movers, declutter first, label your boxes, and that's fine, but it's generic. It doesn't account for the specific ways your particular household fails at moving. The Kaizen approach says your moves have a signature. They break in predictable ways that are unique to your stuff, your family, your decision-making patterns. The goal is to discover that signature and then design around it.
The question Daniel's really asking is, what's the structure that makes that discovery possible? How do you capture the right information, at the right level of detail, in a way that actually gets used next time instead of buried in a notes app and forgotten?
I think the answer starts with borrowing a framework that was designed for exactly this kind of high-stakes, time-pressured debrief. It comes from the military. The U.S. Army formalized the after-action review in the 1970s, and it's now standard practice in fire departments, hospitals, even NASA. The structure is brutally simple. 4 questions. 1. What was supposed to happen? 2. What actually happened? 3. Why was there a difference? 4. What will we do differently next time?
The key design feature is that you do it immediately, within 24 to 48 hours. Not a month later when someone finally gets around to writing a report. The details have to be fresh, and they have to be specific to observable events, not general impressions.
That's exactly where the standard post-move debrief fails, if it happens at all. Most people, if they do anything, sit down weeks later and say, "That was brutal. We need to be more organized next time." That's not a debrief. That's a complaint with a vague resolution attached.
The information that gets lost in that gap is precisely the stuff that would actually change your behavior. You remember you were frustrated. You don't remember that the reason you were frustrated at hour 4 of packing was that you'd organized boxes by room, but not by weight class, so you kept having to stop and redistribute heavy items.
Or that you spent $40 on a parking permit you didn't need because the moving truck fit in the loading zone. Or that the elevator reservation was for 8 a.m., but the truck arrived at 7:45 and the building manager wasn't there yet. These are tiny, concrete, fixable things, and they evaporate within days.
The structure Daniel needs has to solve for 2 things simultaneously. It has to force specificity. No packing was slow. Only the kitchen took 4 hours because we didn't empty the cabinets into staging piles first. And it has to be fast enough that you'll actually do it when you're exhausted and just want to collapse.
That second part is the one most systems get wrong. The enemy of Kaizen is complexity. If your post-move debrief requires opening a laptop and filling out a spreadsheet with 47 columns, you will do it exactly 0 times. Here's what I'd propose. 3 tiers, all designed to be done when you're running on fumes. Tier A is what I'd call the pain points log, and this one you capture during the move itself, not after. Voice memo on your phone, 60 seconds max per day. You hit record and you say, 11 a.m., can't find the box cutter, it's buried under packing paper in the kitchen. 2 p.m., the medium boxes are gone and we're putting books in large boxes, these are going to be impossible to lift. Time stamped, specific, 1 sentence per friction point.
The voice memo format matters here because you're not going to stop and type when your hands are full of furniture. You just talk at your phone and keep moving. The alternative is telling yourself you'll remember, and you won't.
Tier B is the resource inventory. This one you fill out after the move, and it's literally just a count. How many small boxes, medium boxes, large boxes, wardrobe boxes did you actually use? How many rolls of tape? How much bubble wrap? How many dolly straps? And then next to each number, 1 word, enough, too many, or not enough.
This is the tier that pays off hardest on the next move, because you stop guessing. Most people order boxes by gut feel and get it wrong in both directions. Too many of the wrong size, not enough of the right one. After 2 moves with a resource inventory, you know that your household requires, say, 12 medium boxes, 8 large, 4 wardrobe boxes, and 3 rolls of tape. You just order that. No thinking required.
Tier C is the time map. This is a rough timeline of each major phase. When you started packing the kitchen, when you finished, when loading began, when the truck left, when you arrived at the new place. Next to each phase, you write 2 numbers, how long you estimated it would take, and how long it actually took.
The gap between those 2 numbers is where the learning lives. If you estimated the kitchen would take 2 hours and it took 4, that's not a failure. That's data. The question the AAR forces you to ask is, why? Was the estimate based on a different apartment with fewer cabinets? Did you forget to account for wrapping time? Did you get interrupted by the building manager needing to inspect something?
This connects directly back to the 4 AAR questions. What was supposed to happen? The kitchen packs in 2 hours. What actually happened? It took 4. Why the difference? We had twice as many dishes as we remembered, and we ran out of newsprint halfway through. What we'll do next time, count the cabinets before estimating and buy newsprint in bulk.
The discipline here is that every answer to why has to name a specific constraint, not a feeling. Not we were tired, but we started packing at 7 p.m. after a full workday, which meant we were already depleted, and we'd skipped dinner. That's actionable. The fix might be, start packing on a Saturday morning, or prep meals in advance for packing week.
That brings us to the meta point, which is the one most people get wrong. This whole system has to be designed for the absolute lowest possible friction, or it won't survive contact with reality. You've just moved. You're exhausted. The last thing you want is more paperwork.
The entire documentation system should be 3 things. 1 voice memo per day during the move, 60 seconds, no editing, no transcription. 1 single-page checklist after the move, the resource inventory and time map combined, 15 minutes to fill out, and 1 lessons learned document that is literally 10 bullet points, maximum.
10 is a hard cap, because if you write down 23 things to improve, you'll improve none of them. The constraint forces you to prioritize. What were the 10 things that actually caused the most pain, wasted the most time, or cost the most money?
This is where the tape gun belongs. It's not a big thing. It's not even in the top 5, but it's number 7 on the list, and it costs $8 to fix, so you do it. Next move, you don't lose the tape gun. 30 minutes saved. Multiply that by 10 improvements, and suddenly your next move is measurably different from this one.
The whole system lives in a single folder, physical or digital, doesn't matter, that you label Move Kit. It contains the pain points voice memos, the 1-page checklist, and the 10-bullet lessons learned list. You store it somewhere you'll actually find it in 18 months when the landlord sends the non-renewal notice.
Here's the part that makes this sustainable. You're not building a database. You're not creating a moving dashboard. You're just keeping one folder with a few documents in it. The sophistication is in the questions you ask, not the tool you use. A notes app and a voice memo app is the entire tech stack.
Here's where this gets interesting. This system doesn't just make your move smoother, it changes your relationship to the rental market itself. That feeling of helplessness, the sense that you're just being batted around by landlords and lease terms, a lot of that comes from treating each move as a fresh trauma. You finish move number 5, and you feel exactly as powerless as you did after move number 1, because you haven't built any evidence that you're getting better at this.
That's a weird form of learned helplessness that the rental market practically manufactures. The market is broken. The instability is real. But when you have zero documentation, you can't see the improvements you have made, so it feels like nothing changes. The system we're describing creates a paper trail of competence. You can look back and say, move 3 cost $5,000 and took 2 weeks to set up. Move 4 cost $4,000 and took 10 days. That's not nothing. That's proof you're not just a victim of the cycle. You're adapting to it.
This is where the move readiness score comes in. After 2 or 3 moves with this system, you've got enough data to start quantifying your preparedness across a handful of dimensions. Packing efficiency, how many hours per room? Setup time at the new place. Cost accuracy, how close your actual spending was to your estimate. And physical toll, which is squishier, but you can track things like how many days of back pain or how many nights of terrible sleep.
Rate each one on a 1 to 10 scale. It's crude, but crude is fine. You're not publishing this in a journal. You're creating a feedback loop that makes the process visible to yourself. And there's something almost gamified about it. Can you get your setup time from a 4 to a 7? Can you close the gap between estimated cost and actual cost by 10%?
That documented cost breakdown from the previous move is what makes target setting real. Daniel mentioned his last move was $4,000. If he does this debrief, he can look at that number and say, okay, 300 of that was the elevator reservation we messed up, 200 was last-minute packing supplies we bought at full price because we ran out, and 500 was the mover's overtime rate because loading ran long. Next move, we fixed those three things, and the target is $3,200. That's not a wish. That's a budget with line items.
The inventory data gets even more powerful over time. After 3 or 4 moves, your resource inventory stops being a post-move checklist and starts being a data set. You know exactly how many boxes your kitchen requires. You know which pieces of furniture survive moves and which ones die. That bookshelf from IKEA that costs $200 but warps every single time it's disassembled. You've now paid for it 3 times over in replacement costs and frustration.
This is the inventory as portfolio insight. Every piece of furniture you own has a hidden move cost. A $1,200 sofa that breaks down into 3 pieces might require 1 mover and a standard truck. An $800 sofa that doesn't disassemble might require 2 movers and a larger truck. Over 5 moves, that cheaper sofa costs you $400 more in moving fees. The data makes that visible.
You start making purchase decisions differently. You're not just buying a couch. You're buying a couch with a known move profile. And over a decade of renting, that changes what you own. Your possessions become move compatible by design, not by accident.
There's another dimension here I want to sit with, and it's the social one. Daniel's moving with Hannah, and they have a 1-year-old. Different people experience the same move completely differently. One person's dominant memory might be the packing chaos. The other's might be the setup exhaustion. If you do the debrief separately and then compare, you surface blind spots neither of you would catch alone.
It prevents the blame spiral. You didn't pack the kitchen on time is a personal failure. We underestimated kitchen backing by 40% is a planning failure. Same facts, completely different conversation. The AAR structure depersonalizes the debrief. You're not asking who screwed up. You're asking what the gap was between the plan and reality and why.
That shift matters enormously in a high-stress context. Moving is one of those experiences that reliably produces conflict. You're tired, you're spending money you didn't want to spend, things are breaking, the timeline is slipping. If the post-move conversation is just 2 people venting about what went wrong, it can easily curdle into resentment. But if you're both looking at the same time map and the same pain points log and asking the same 4 WAR questions, you're on the same team, solving the same problem.
That's the through line here. The system doesn't just produce better moves, it produces a better relationship to the fact that you have to move. You stop being someone the rental market does things to, and start being someone who's systematically getting better at handling it. The market's still broken. The instability's still there. But you're not the same person at move 6 that you were at move 1.
Let's get concrete. Here's exactly what you do starting tonight, or whenever you finally collapse onto whatever surface isn't covered in boxes. Step 1. Within 48 hours of finishing this move, sit down with Hannah and do a 30-minute after-action review. Use the 4 military questions verbatim. What was supposed to happen? What actually happened? Why the difference? What do we do next time? Record the whole thing on a voice memo. Do not skip this because you're tired. The memories are decaying as we speak.
The voice memo isn't for posterity. It's because you're too exhausted to take notes, and the act of speaking it out loud forces you to be specific in a way that nodding along to a mental summary doesn't. You'll hear yourself say, "The kitchen took forever," and Hannah will say, "No, the kitchen took 4 hours because we didn't empty the cabinets first," and that correction is the whole point.
Step 2. Create the move kit. One folder, physical or digital. I don't care which, but pick one you'll actually find in 18 months. In it goes the pain points voice memos from the move, the resource inventory with your box counts and tape rolls marked enough or not enough, the time map with estimated versus actual durations, and the lessons learned list, 10 bullet points, hard cap. 10 things you will do differently.
Step 3 is where the PDCA cycle actually closes. Before your next move, before you pack a single box, spend 20 minutes reviewing the move kit. Pull out the top 3 lessons and implement them first. Order the right boxes. Buy the brightly colored tape gun. Pre-wrap the wine glasses. The improvement doesn't happen in the debrief. It happens when you deliberately change your behavior before the next iteration. That's the act phase.
Here's the takeaway I want to leave on the table. This system isn't just for moving. It works for any recurring life disruption. Job changes, home renovations, even the annual holiday travel nightmare. The principle is identical. Treat recurring chaos as a process, document granularly while the pain is fresh, improve incrementally. Most people just endure these things and hope they go better next time. Hope is not a strategy. A 30-minute debrief and a single page of notes is a strategy.
Once you've got this system in place, it raises a bigger question. We've been talking about the move itself, the packing, the loading, the physical haul. But the move is just one phase of a much larger broken process. What about the apartment search? What about the lease negotiation? Those are recurring too, and most people approach them with the same amnesia.
That's exactly where my mind went. Imagine applying the same AAR structure to how you found the apartment. What channels actually produced viable listings versus what was noise? How many viewings did you do before finding this place? Which estate agents were worth dealing with and which ones wasted your time? Most people finish an apartment search and all they remember is that it was stressful and took forever. But the data is there. How many weeks, how many viewings, which listing sites, what price per square meter you ended up with versus what you started looking for.
The lease negotiation is even more opaque. You go in blind, you make a counteroffer, you maybe get a concession or maybe you don't, and then you never think about it again until the next lease. But if you documented what you asked for, what you got, and what the landlord's red lines were, you'd walk into the next negotiation with an actual playbook. You'd know which concessions are standard in your market and which ones are moonshots.
The move is the most visceral part of this cycle. But it's not the only part where iterative improvement compounds. The apartment search, the lease terms, the setup process, even the utility transfers. All of these are sub-processes that happen every time, and all of them are currently run on gut feel and fading memory.
Here's the thing. You can't control the rental market. That's the reality Daniel's living in, and it's the reality for a growing number of people. What you can control is whether you learn from your moves or just endure them. The difference between someone who's a victim of circumstance and someone who's getting better at handling it. It's not money, it's not luck, it's not some secret knowledge. It's a 30-minute debrief and a single page of notes.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1810s, Turkish oil wrestling matches in Kirkpinar were sometimes used as a cover for smuggling sheep across provincial borders because the crowds and chaos gave shepherds plausible reason to move large numbers of animals through checkpoints unquestioned.
That's a lot of greasy livestock.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want to send us a question about moving or Kaizen or literally anything else, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.